This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Earlier this month, the Dell computer company announced it would be opening a new manufacturing plant somewhere in the Triad. The announcement came with the usual pomp and circumstance, as well as a tax incentive package worth as much as $242 million. Dell has said it will hire 700 employees in the first year and as many as 1,500 within 5 years. Governor Mike Easley says the deal makes good economic sense for North Carolina. Certainly no area has been hit harder than the Triad by the loss of manufacturing jobs in the textile and furniture sectors. But does the deal help stem the tide of jobs going overseas? And should states be in the business of subsidizing private companies? We're exploring the Dell deal this hour with Justin Catanoso. He's the executive editor of the Triad Business Journal. Hi, Justin.
Hello, Frank.
And Mike Walden is a professor of economics at North Carolina State University. Hello, Mike.
Hello. How are you?
I'm fine. We're welcoming your calls this hour as well at 877-962-9862. Should the state give Dell so many incentives? Should Guilford Forsyth counties pony up even more? Is Dell the best way to improve the Triad's economy? And what other issues does the Dell deal raise about the Triad's economy and the state as well? 877-962-9862 if you want to join the conversation. Justin Catanoso, let me ask you first, $242 million, is it all tax incentives? How is the deal structured?
Well, the deal was structured very carefully. North Carolina has sort of come a long way in the last 20 years in how it handles incentives. Not a lot of this money is being put on the table up front. Very little of it, in fact, is. There's some training money from the Golden Leaf Foundation that will be there in cash, but 95% of this incentives package from the state, which is the largest in state history, is performance-based, and it's spread out over 20 years. They've done this in a fairly sophisticated way, and there are all these different markers that Dell has to meet. So when we say that Dell is being given $242 million, it's really a bit of a misnomer. Mm-hmm. They have to earn that, and they really have to earn it at the highest level of making all their markers, whether it's in the amount of investment that they make, the number of people that they hire, and the number of computers that they manufacture, if they're going to get this total amount. So it really is broken down in a way for the state to protect itself if Dell isn't true to its word all along the way over these 20 years.
Well, what are some of these markers that Dell has to meet? We're hearing 1,500 employees. Is that the top end? You mean if they hire 1,500, then they start getting the full amount?
Well, first they have to hire 700 within the first year, and then it's 1,500 within 5 years.
Right.
If they don't reach those marks, it doesn't mean that they don't get any incentives. It means that they get a percentage less based on how many fewer employees that they've hit. So, again, the top end of total incentives that Dell could get is $242 million. If they make all their top marks. Now, there's another thing in here as well, which is real smart on the state's part, and that is health care benefits. Dell, for all its full-time employees, must be paying 50% of health care costs for those employees. That's a good deal as well. And there are also wage levels that they have to meet. Now, the average wage that they're saying at Dell is $28,000 a year, which is below the median wage here in the Triad. The average, basically hourly wage they're saying on the assembly plant floor is going to be $9 to $14 an hour.
Mike Walden at NC State, does this, Governor Easley says this deal makes economic sense. Do you think it does?
Well, the numbers that the governor's office and the Commerce Department have cranked out are correct, and it does. I mean, what the state looks at is, or tries to answer the question, is the state better off with Dell than without Dell? And I think that there is a misnomer that somehow the state is going to cut a check of $240 million and give to Dell. That's not the case at all. Most of this, if my understanding of the deal is right, is in terms of taxes that don't have to be paid down the road, and it is spread out over a long period of time. But what the state does is they use an economic model to try to look at the impact that Dell will have on the state economy, and not only the people that Dell will hire and the wages they will pay, but also other economic impacts in the state, for example, when those workers spend their money in the state economy, when Dell may, for example, buy some inputs from other companies in North Carolina. And the state tries to estimate those total impacts over a multi-year period, look at what the impact on the state economy is, and again, if these numbers do turn out to be correct, it's somewhere in the neighborhood of $20 to $25 billion. And then the state also looks at the additional tax revenues going into the state coffers as a result of this additional income. And they're estimating, I think, around $700 million in additional state tax revenues above and beyond the incentives money. So, again, if these numbers are correct, then this is a good deal for North Carolina. It's going to increase the state economy, and it's actually going to result in more, not less, state revenues going to the coffers.
That's what I was going to ask you. So according to the state's projections, this money will be made back and then some in
That's right. And,
revenue.
Of course, these are projections. They're the best projections that one can muster. But this is, I think, exactly the kind of approach that has to be taken. And I think everyone that I've talked to in state government would rather Dell, for example, have come to North Carolina without these incentives. But the reality of the situation is that we live in a very competitive market for these large trophy firms. Many states are willing to put money on the table for that company to come to that particular location. And economic studies show that the companies do respond to this. They may, for example, whittle down their possible sites to two or three in terms of economic fundamentals. But after that, the incentives package can tip the hand.
Yeah, but look, Dell's going to go somewhere. They're making these computers to make money, not to make jobs for North Carolina or any other state. So that said, why not let Dell go where it will? And if you've got $242 million that you can spread out in jobs creation over 20 years, why not do it in a way that really creates new jobs rather than create the jobs Dell's already going to make?
Well, Frank, let me jump in on that because
Justin?
I think, one, again, this is money that Dell is generating. It's not money that's coming straight from the Treasury, except for some of the upfront money that is going for job training.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a big pool of $200 million that Dell is getting. This is above and beyond the taxes they're going to be generating. But there's an answer to that here in the Triad, which is quite dramatic, and we've seen it play out here as we've been covering these stories over the last 5 years. The Triad's economy is as tied to manufacturing as any region in the country. 25% of the workforce still in this area is tied to manufacturing. We've lost 37,000 manufacturing jobs here since 1999. That's a lot. What is coming back and replacing them are service sector jobs paying even less than $9 an hour, primarily at Walmart, which is the fastest hiring company right now in the Triad. So the state is looking at this, and they know this is the case. They see an opportunity for a huge employer like Dell to come in and create a lot of jobs, and they're willing to pay for it, mindful of the fact that not that long ago, Mercedes-Benz came in and we came up short on that deal. Alabama paid a ton of money. Everybody thought it was a lousy deal for Alabama. And for the first 5 years, Alabama was dipping into the state treasury and everybody was suffering. But Alabama, central Alabama, has been transformed by Mercedes-Benz, or actually, by Mercedes-Benz manufacturing in that area. Tens of thousands of good-paying jobs have come in there. Incentives is we're sort of stuck with this, and if we don't play that game, we're not going to compete at any level, and all we're going to get is these low-paying service sector jobs.
And again, I think the number to focus on is not the $240 million that's purported in incentives. It's the $700 million that the state presumably will earn, if the projections are right, above the $240 million. So I think that's the thinking on the part of our state officials.
Right. But again, the question is, let me ask you this part of the question, because in a sense, it was a two-part question. So the second part is, could the money be seen as an investment over 20 years, not as an expenditure, the $242 million? And would it be better put, is there an opportunity cost here? Dell is a good company. It's a big company, but these jobs are paying $28,000, and that's pretty much top, as good as that's going to get. Could we be trying to create new industries that have much higher thresholds, much higher ceilings?
Well, sure. There's always, you're talking to an economist here, always there are opportunity costs. There are always monies that, or there are always other ways of spending money. And we don't know. I don't know of any silver bullet where we could take $240 million and say we're going to create this competitive industry over here. I think pragmatically the state has to look at what it's offered. This is a marquee firm. The wages, I think, are wages that are very good compared to the wages of the manufacturing jobs that have been lost in the Triad. They will be able to take people who have lost jobs in the mill and with a modest amount of retraining, move into those jobs in Dell. In other words, these are jobs that don't require a PhD. It's fine to have jobs that require PhDs, but it takes a long period of time of training. So, again, pragmatically, practically, I think the state looked at this as a deal that it really couldn't pass up.
Was Dell considering other locations?
Well, it definitely was. One of the things that's been aggravating for us journalists covering this is that this deal has been so quiet for so long. Now, the Winston-Salem Journal broke this deal back in June, and we picked up on it, and we've all been covering this story since midsummer, but very few official sources even confirmed that Dell was the company that was in play up until about a week before the governor called a special session. So we do know from some reporting that came out a week ago in Roanoke that Roanoke made a pitch and threw some incentives in front of Dell, but in some ways it was late coming. If there's anything to be critical of, again, from those of us that are supposed to be holding public officials accountable, is that we don't have all the information to even ask all the good questions that are coming in. And we're kind of being presented a package of data and a package of incentives and said, we've done the best we could by you. I don't know that that's the case because we don't know who else was competing and what else they were putting on the table. But I want to go back to your last question, Frank, because it's a very viable one here in the triad as we try to transition away from manufacturing. How do we get into higher wage jobs in this area? And there's a lot of effort being put into that place right now, but this is what we're stuck with. We are stuck with an undereducated workforce. Right now in the triad, 52% of adults either don't have a high school degree or that's all they have is a high school degree. In our rural counties, whether we're talking about Yadkin County or Rockingham County or Davidson County, 1 in 3 adults do not have a high school degree. You're not going to build a high-tech, high-wage economy on that kind of workforce. And so Dell makes a lot more sense for this area at
this
time.
Well, we are talking about the Dell deal. There are those who disagree. We're going to talk more about how that deal will have an impact on the triad, the state of North Carolina. And we're taking your calls at 877-962-9862. At one point, do incentives become pure giveaways? 877-962-9862, the number to call if you want to join the conversation on the state of things. Support for the state of things comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners who support WUNC. This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. We're talking about the deal for Dell, corporate subsidies, and smart development today with Justin Catanoso and Mike Walden, an economics professor at MC State. And we're joined now by Paul Lupke, who is a Democratic state legislator from Durham area. And Paul, I take it you are not as happy with this deal as we've heard earlier in the program. Paul Lupke? Hi, Paul. You there? Hi, Paul. Can you start again for us?
Yeah, I said I'm most unhappy with the way you've set up the program here. Both of the people I was driving in my car and heard the first 5 minutes, both Justin and Frank have spoken pretty positively about this deal, and you don't have anyone on the program who can tell you what a basically poorly bargained deal this was by Governor Easley. The people of North Carolina, through our representatives, and I'm very, very just concerned about the whole lack of perspective you brought into your program. I don't blame Justin or Mike. They were asked to be here. But how about pointing out the point that no member of the General Assembly even saw the bill? Most members of the General Assembly didn't see the bill until 2 o'clock, and the vote was at 6 o'clock in the Senate. It was at 9 o'clock in the House. How can you talk about a deal of that magnitude, $250 million, with no obligations made of Dell, in terms of the bargains? Any amendment that we legislators tried to put on, we were told it would clear the deal. I just think that your program here is very stilted to begin with. But the question I will ask, because I heard both Mike and Justin talking about the other states, is where is the other offer that North Carolina was competing against? I agree with Justin that Roanoke's newspaper story pointed out that Virginia was not in the deal. So who is in the deal besides North Carolina?
Well, let me ask you this, Paul. Now that you've seen the deal and the details, how do you feel about it? You're on the show now.
Well, Frank, you must not be reading the newspapers, because I was among one of four Democrats who spoke against the deal. I put an op-ed in the Greensboro paper that appeared the Monday after the deal. There are multiple things wrong with that in which the taxpayers were not protected. One of the first things is that we try to put in, that is, those of us who are running amendments, try to have an amendment that required Dell to look first at people who are laid off from the factories everybody talks about. The mill workers, the furniture workers, the textile even cigarette factory workers. Mm-hmm. And the fact of the matter is, when we put that amendment in, it was told by the governor's office that that would kill the deal. That means that Dell can hire anybody, somebody straight out of high school, for all of its jobs, does not have to hire anybody who's laid off from the furniture industry, And it just is very troubling to me that UNC would run a program that doesn't provide any kind of perspective on that.
Do they have to hire people in the area, or can they go from out of state?
They could bring somebody in from Tennessee if they wanted to. There's no obligations. And Justin talks about that health care deal. That was no special deal. That was already in the law. I and others had fought to put that in the law 5 years ago in the General Assembly. And the fact of the matter is Dell pays 70% at their plants in Tennessee and Texas, and when we tried to put in an amendment, one of my colleagues had an amendment to require that, it was told by the governor's office, oh, that'll clear the deal too. So I'm just saying that it was an incredibly poor moment for the people of North Carolina in that Dell has not been required to do anything. And at this point, I think the question is, for Justin and to Mike, is where's the other state that had the offer? I think we were bargaining against ourselves. If anyone has data to the contrary, show it to me.
That certainly has been an aggravation on our part.
Is that Justin?
I would definitely agree with that. We have been kept in the dark on this. We have been really unable to ask the questions that we would like to ask because the people involved with this project have not really gone on the record. We still don't know who has been competing on this. And so what we're left with is evaluating what came through the General Assembly. But the legislator is exactly right. I mean, this came up at the last minute, and it was really presented as an either-or. And it really kind of boxed people into a corner. But again, if you keep things in the context of how desperate we are in the triad for these kinds of jobs, you can see why so many legislators said, let's go ahead and do this.
Well, the question becomes, if desperation leads to a form of corporate welfare where you're giving large corporations who already are making a profit big deals to come in without any obligation to stay in the area or provide good-paying jobs. So is desperation leading to very bad judgment? I think that's the question, isn't it?
Mike,
I'd be happy to have an answer. That's the answer.
So
Mike Walden, how do you make a judgment? You said it is a good deal for the state, but it's, you know, it sounds like a lot of the information really isn't available. How do you say it's a good deal?
Well, of course, I'm an economist, so I'm very limited, and I respect Representative Lukey, and he made excellent points. I suspect that a reason I suspect a reason why a lot of the information did not come out earlier is because probably in the negotiations with Dell, there was a requirement that this be kept secret. Would it be better if all the information were out in the open that people could evaluate it beforehand? Certainly, I would agree with that point. Whether this is a good deal or not, again, the numbers, and I should have full disclosure here. I worked with the Commerce Department on the economic model that they used to evaluate this. No payment to me, simply as a university professor with some area of expertise in this to help them set up the model to crunch the numbers. Not a paying job at all. But if the numbers are accurate, then it does look like over the 15 or 20 year period, this will be a net benefit to North Carolina. Does Dell benefit? Certainly they benefit. They're getting a tremendous reduction in tax revenues, or I'm sorry, in tax payments. What the state has had to evaluate is, again, given the situation at Triad with the loss of manufacturing jobs, given the desire to increase moderately paying manufacturing jobs in the Triangle, the state, in its judgment, decided this was a deal that made sense.
Justin Catanoso, has the state gotten to the point where we're so desperate that we need to operate in secret, sort of bypass some of the usual scrutiny in the democratic process because, well, we really have a very serious problem?
We are definitely bypassing a lot of this openness, and a lot of this openness used to be there in the past. And the deal that comes to mind here in the Triad was when Federal Express was looking at where they were going to put their regional air cargo hub, and we knew who was in the running for that. We knew that it was the Charlotte area. We knew it was the Triangle area. We knew it was Global Transpark, and we also knew there was a site in South Carolina. We were able to sort of look at all the different policies and procedures that were in place in those various areas, as well as South Carolina, make some comparisons, ask questions, and then there was a lot of buzz. It really kind of informed people along the way of what was coming. Very controversial. It was not an easy process. It ended up coming here, but I think people knew a lot more about it. I don't know that they were any more comfortable with it at the end of the deal. There was, you know, over $100 million in incentives going to that package as well. But here, everything really was locked down. There really were confidentiality agreements that kept us from really asking the kinds of questions we like to ask. But if we can just set aside the state incentives for a moment and look at what's happening locally right now, because Dell has selected the Triad region, and they're saying we're going to go one spot in the Triad region, and now they're looking for millions more from local governments that are not growing. Our tax bases here are flat. Can we afford to do the site improvements for Dell, to help more with worker retraining, to extend water and sewer lines? These are things that governments do typically, but they're putting a lot more money on the table for Dell than they have done for companies in the past because we're desperate for these jobs. Mm.
Paul Lubke, why do you think this measure passed with so little scrutiny?
Well, it passed because first of all, I and every other North Carolina legislator is concerned about jobs for our citizens. I agree with that we need to do something, and that in the way the world is right now, you have to cut deals with companies. My concern has been with the Dell deal that any single amendment that legislators offered from the legislative branch to improve this deal, we were told by the governor's office, oh, no, you can't do that. Well, we don't have a single branch of government. We have a legislative branch as well as an executive branch. And so the whole way in which this thing was presented, if you pass an amendment, Dell's going to leave. That's why I'm so concerned today about the question of where Dell's competition was, where North Carolina's competition was. The longer we wait, this deal happened November 4th, within 48 hours of the time the polls had closed, legislators were voting on this. I said at the time, what's the rush? I want to know where the other state was that had a deal for Dell that we had to choose the deal that we did without any restrictions on Dell. Do you know that Dell is getting a tax break as if it is going to inner-city neighborhood? But it is not going to inner-city neighborhood. It is not having to pay the wage standard that normally of $31,000 it would have to. It's going to pay $25,000 for its employees. And we've wiped out all those standards that many of us in the legislature worked years to set up for Dell. And when we legislators raised questions about this, we were told Dell will go elsewhere. So my question, Frank, for you, for your guests, for the public, is where else was Dell going to go? Where's the other deal?
Well, I tell you what, Paul, I really would like you to hang on the line, but I will bring Dell into the conversation right now, talking about that decision to locate a new plant in North Carolina. Michelle Blood is Senior Manager of Public Affairs at Dell and joins us on the line from Texas. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
First of all, tell us why Dell selected the Triad.
We selected North Carolina and are looking at the Triad because of the manufacturing excellence of the workforce. And, of course, the workforce is very important to us. The quality of life is important to us, as well as the logistics advantages of being in the Triad area.
Were you looking at other places?
You know, we have folks who are looking at other places year-round around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And
were you close to striking a deal with another state?
We just do not discuss all of the places that we look at. As in any economic development situation, sometimes we go into looking at something and it works like it did in North Carolina, and other times it doesn't work out, and we don't go any further.
When you are in, of course, private negotiations with other private partners, that's to be expected. Now, when you work in the public sector, do you feel the rules need to change a little bit since you are operating with, well, in this case, you'll have some public money to go into your coffers? Do you need to be a little more open?
You know, we don't set the rules for economic development. My experience has been generally it's a pretty confidential situation until the announcement time.
How does Dell go about choosing between the two counties, Guilford and Forsyth counties?
You know, we look at the whole package. We look at again, the workforce, the quality of life, the logistics, and we look at the locations that are available to for the facility.
Now,
it's
once
the whole package that we look at.
Once you're here, is there any guarantee in the incentive package that you will stay in the state of North Carolina?
I'm not an expert in the actual package. The governor's office or the Department of Commerce could certainly give you more information, but I believe it is all performance based. Meaning that, you know, as we continue to hire, the incentives continue to be in place.
All right. 877-962-9862, the number to call if you want to talk about the package. And Paul Lubke, I don't know, here's your chance if you want to talk with someone from Dell. We have Michelle Blood.
Well, I mean, I find it extraordinary, Michelle, that you don't have any details here. Your company cut the deal with North Carolina. Why can't you tell any of us here, any of our listeners in North Carolina, what the deal was? Why do you insist on paying only $25,000 a year when the normal standards under our state law would have been $31,000?
We are not experts in your standards and your laws, and certainly you and the Department of Commerce can speak best to what's available for companies, and incentive packages are kind of a normal thing in today's world. So we are not experts at them, so of course we don't comment and talk about them.
How normal is it? Can Dell be profitable without these incentive packages?
You know, it's just part of the way that economic development is working in today's world.
All right, Michelle Blood, Senior Manager for Public Affairs at Dell, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you.
We're taking your calls this hour as well. 877-962-9862 is the number to call. And, Paul, let's see, I'm going to have to put you on hold for just a moment while I bring Matt on the line. Hang on just a second. Hello, Matt.
Hello.
Hi, Matt.
Hi.
Yeah.
Yeah, hi. It seems to me that there are two issues going on here. One is the process and the other is the outcome, namely the deal. I don't like the process any more than anybody else does, but now that it's done, I think we ought to just concentrate on the deal and figure out whether it really was worth it and what could go wrong at this point, if anything.
All right, Matt. Well, let's get a response. I'm going to say goodbye to you and bring Paul Lupke back. I guess, Paul, part of the problem is if the process is flawed, you might end up with a bad deal and you won't know it till it's too late.
Well, one of my concerns would be that small businesses, there will be a lot of small businesses. I believe either Justin or Mike, and I'm sorry, I can't remember which of you mentioned the point that there will be a lot of spin-off activity. But every small business that spins off from Dell, and both of you guys know this, will be paying their full tax bill. They're not getting any break on their taxes. All the existing companies that are there in the triad that in some way will serve Dell, they won't get any break on their taxes. And in particular, there's a lot of people who during campaigns pay lip service to helping small business and reducing small business tax burden. But the fact of the matter is when you give $250 million away to Dell, it's not going to be possible to lower taxes on small business than it would be if we had not done such a generous deal to Dell. My point is not that we didn't have to cut a deal with Dell. We should have cut a tougher bargain. And the way that the governor's office presented it to us in the General Assembly gave us no opportunity to bargain on these points, such as first source hiring, the very point I made before, that furniture workers laid off, that person does not even have first choice at getting one of these jobs. Yet this is the rationale that the governor has given us as to why we had to make this deal, was to hire the laid-off workers. I have sympathy for the laid-off workers. That's why I put in an amendment to require Dell to look first at the laid-off people who are at employment security offices. And the governor's office, in defending Dell, said Dell can't accept any such criterion as a basis for getting they're coming to North Carolina. I don't understand why not. That was bad bargaining on the part of the Department of Commerce.
Well, your answer also suggests another problem, a potential problem, in Ohio appeals court. Federal appeals court in Ohio has overruled a deal, what appears to be a similar deal from Daimler Chrysler to locate a plant in Ohio, and that was because it violated, according to the appeals court, interstate commerce provisions. And so I wonder, Justin, if there's a possibility that these deals could be illegal because they do give an unfair competitive advantage, or could, to one company over another.
There is no precedent that I'm aware of that happening in North Carolina. I mean, one of the things that really is starting to rankle folks locally in Guilford and Forsyth County is that having accepted a very generous package from the state, they're looking for millions more from the local governments, and the local governments are more than eager to dip into their treasuries to try to make these things happen. Now, it's important to note that they have policies in place that allow this to happen, but they really are throwing a lot more money at Dell than they have for any other existing large company that's in this area. And for us, the question becomes, if the local governments just said, no, we've already put the incentives in the ground, we've given you a workforce, we've given you logistics, we've given you all the things that the Dell spokesman said, please pick a site and come in here and get to business, would they walk away from the table? I don't think so, but we are so comfortable with giving these kinds of incentives, and Dell knows that communities like to compete, and right now there's a bidding war between Guilford and Forsyth County for millions of dollars that the local treasuries can ill afford to put on the table.
Well, it does raise the other question, too, doesn't it, Justin, and I'll ask you, Mike, as well, whether or not they can get the incentives, and then 5 years down the line, as the competitive landscape changes, they say, hey, you know, we're going to need a better package, or we're going to have to go again. We'll up and leave. Is there a guarantee that they have to stay for the 20-year period of this agreement?
again, the money is paid out over 20 years.
Yeah.
So it's all in sort of five-year increments. They're not going to get any of this money up front, except for the job training, which represents about 5% of the state package.
Paul Lipke, does that make you feel a little bit better about this, the fact that the money doesn't, it's not really lump sum payment, they don't get it if they don't perform?
Well, but there's all kinds of, the devil's in the details here. Another example of an amendment that some of us ran that was again told absolutely not. Dell is able to drop their labor force from 1,500 down to 900 and therefore lay off 600 people and not have any penalty in terms of their picking up their tax credits. This was something that none of us could understand. Why not? I mean, a 10% break, we understand. There's sort of variables in business from business season cycles, etc. But you can drop 40% of the employees, you can lay off 600 people in the triad, and still get your full dollar payout by the state. That's the kind of thing that I don't understand why that was defensible by the state. And I think most people in the state, including most people in the triad, had no idea that there were such problems in the deal, in the details. Yes, we all knew it was being played out over time. We're told by people in Tennessee that Dell sticks to the absolute letter of the law and doesn't do a penny more than what they're obligated to do. And so I would expect they'll stay for the full 20 years and leave.
Well,
that's their record, according to Tennessee.
We are talking about the growing economy in the Triad, the deal to bring Dell to the area. My guests are Justin Catanoso, executive editor of Triad Business Journal, Mike Walden, NC State economist, and Paul Lupke, a Democratic legislator in the State House and representing Durham, and taking your phone calls at 877-962-9862. Our conversation continues in a moment. Stay with us. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. We are talking this hour about the state of the Triad's economy as the showdown for Dell heats up, the attempt to bring Dell into the state, a $242 million incentive package that spreads out over a 20-year period. Justin Catanoso, business writer, is with us, economist Mike Walden, and Democratic state legislator Paul Lupke, all on the program. And as promised, we're taking your calls this hour at 877-962-9862. Anna's on the line from Winston-Salem. Hi, Anna.
Hello. I have something, just a couple things I'd like to say as a business owner in Forsyth County, and it's some real practical things that I'm not sure that just your general audience know and understand.
Mm-hmm.
I really want our legislators to work hard to get us the best deal that they can, but I want them to think about the putting constraints on business and what the tech industry has been like, and that none of us have got any guarantees out there right now. But whether those workers that Dell hires come from out of our state or in our state, those workers are going to buy homes, they're going to buy cars, they're going to buy refrigerators, they're going to buy clothes, they're going to go to the doctor, they're going to have televisions, they're going to hire plumbers, electricians, they're going to get their hair done. The money that's going to bring into our area, regardless of how long they're going to stay, is really important to our economy right now. Now, it's up to our counties to do feasibility studies and say, this is what we've got to have from them in order to get them here. But the trickle effect of these folks coming is so great that it's really important that we as North Carolinians understand that we bargain fairly and honestly, and that we really look at the realities in the business industry today.
All right. Well, Anna, I want to get a chance to get a response, so I'm going to thank you for your call and bring Paul Lupke in here. And Mike Walden, let me ask you whether or not, you know, Time Magazine did its study on corporate welfare and talked about how, you know, a lot of social welfare programs were dropped because they were destroying incentives, they were unfair. Don't these incentive programs do the same thing, give unfair advantages and destroy incentives for corporations to be competitive and to be lean? Are they really good ideas?
Well, again, I'll go back to the point I made at the top of the show. From the state's perspective, the major question that the state asks is, is the state going to be better off economically with Dell than without Dell? And again, the number crunch in the state did suggest that it will be. Now,
all right. Let me just get one quick question, because we're going to have to go here to Paul Lupke. Whether or not this is a done deal, is there anything that can be revised, or is this the package, and is Dell coming for $242 million?
Well, this is the done deal. I mean, we lost the battle in the General Assembly, those of us who wanted to tighten it up. And I want to say one thing to Anna. The reason why I and others fought to keep the wage standard of $31,000 is because $31,000 versus $25,000, that's $6,000 more that each employee would have to spend in the triad to help you and other business people benefit from them. By keeping it such a low-wage job, $25,000, the whole triad is hurt in terms of the spin-off effects of those employees, and we should not have let Dell come in at such a low level. We should have demanded at least a $28,000 wage, a 90% of the standard.
All right, Democratic State Legislator Paul Lupke, thank you very much. Justin Catanoso, Executive Editor of the Triad Business Journal, and Professor Mike Walden, an economist at North Carolina State University, thank all of you.
Thank you.
Just ahead, the story behind the story of the movie Bright Leaves and remembering the Greensboro Massacre. Occasionally we read from your letters, and a few Wednesdays ago, on November 17th, my colleague Melinda Pencava interviewed filmmaker Ross McElwee on his newest movie, Bright Leaves, that chronicles his obsession with a Hollywood film from the 1950s. The plot of that film centers on two warring tobacco families in North Carolina. Listener Terrence Fitzsimmons sent us a letter about that program. He said, "I never heard a reference to the novel that the film was taken from, Bright Leaf." He writes, "This was an interesting omission in the discussion for several reasons. The book was written by a North Carolina author, Foster Fitzsimmons. He was on the UNC faculty when the book was written. The world premiere of the movie was at the Ambassador Theater in downtown Raleigh. One other interesting aspect of the book is its rarity. Both the Duke family and the Reynolds family thought that the book was about their patriarch, so they took pains to buy the book off the shelves. And strangely enough, the publisher declined to issue a second printing. I know all this because the author was my father." Terrence Fitzsimmons joins us on the line from Raleigh now. Welcome to the program, Terrence.
Thank you, Frank. Thanks for having me.
Sure. Tell us a little bit more about your father, Foster Fitzsimmons.
Well, he was on the UNC faculty about 30 years in the Department of Dramatic Art. And strangely enough, I guess if you asked him at the time, he would have considered himself primarily a dancer rather than an author.
What got him interested in the tobacco industry?
Well, actually, according to my oldest brother, this was sort of an assignment given to him. It was part of a project that he was working on through the Federal Writers Project during the end of the Depression, part of Roosevelt's New Deal stuff. And he presented several different plot lines that they were going to actually, from the beginning, make a movie out of, and they selected that one. The tobacco wars.
Story. Give us an outline. Give us a brief plot outline.
Well, it's basically the story of a fellow who was sort of on the outs with the social ends and the blue bloods in the tobacco business down here, and he was sort of rebuffed by them continuously, and he wanted to get into it, and then. That coupled with the arrival on the scene of a fellow from Connecticut who had an idea for an automatic cigarette making machine. This fellow was rebuffed by all the blue bloods also, and these two got together and took a huge gamble and started making cigarettes, and that turned out to be a big winner, and he proceeded to use that financial power to drive all his rivals out of business.
So that sounds a little bit like a couple families we're familiar with down here.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And was it one family or both? Apparently, the Dukes and the Reynolds thought that they were talking about them. Was it a composite? Was it one family or the other?
That's the way it was explained to me, that it was just a composite from all my father's research on the thing. And, of course, some of his own imagination that went into that also.
Apparently struck a nerve, huh?
Maybe so.
Well, and was there, I mean, did you find out about the effort to take the book off the shelves?
That was just told to me. That was just like a family story, and I have no way to verify that or anything. But I do know that there are two editions to the book, a regular edition and a book club edition. But there was never a second edition issued, even though it did disappear from the shelves.
Who has the rights to the book now?
My father sold all the rights to the studio at the time. That was part of the deal.
I see. So there may not be a second edition.
Right.
So tell us a little bit more about your father then. Did he go on writing after that, more plays?
He wrote actually some plays, but no more novels. I think, and he was always reticent about talking about the book to me. And I think it was because it was not what he would consider a pleasant experience.
You mean writing the book or the aftermath?
The aftermath and all the stuff that went along with it.
So he never really told you the story and whether or not he went to the publisher and there was a big...
No, he was strangely quiet about that.
Yeah, that's interesting. So we don't really know, kind of the details of the package. But were you able to... did you read the book growing up?
Well, actually, I didn't read it until I was 30 years old. I think I was sort of threatened by the book. I didn't know if I'd like it and how would I deal with that But I did like it when I did read it and thoroughly enjoyed it. And then I got to see the movie at some 2 o'clock in the morning because that's when it sometimes comes on.
And was it pretty faithful to the book?
Not really, but as faithful as most of those things are.
So have you developed an interest in trying to get the rights or see this book somehow make its way back into print?
I think it would be an interesting probably story to tell somewhere. I wouldn't know how to go about doing that. I'm not in the writing business at all. I'm work at the EPA. I'm a statistician. All this artistic stuff just jumped right past me and went to my son.
I see. Well, what's he do?
He's in the School of the Arts and the filmmaking school.
And your mother was an actress, is that right?
That's correct. And actually in Ross McElwee's movie, at the end of it, she was interviewed and assured him that it wasn't about his great-grandfather.
So it's not as threatening. Maybe the movie version is not quite as threatening or direct, I guess, as the book.
Maybe so. Uh-huh. Maybe more powerful people behind the movie, too. I don't know.
Terrence Fitzsimmons, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Frank.
If you'd like to participate in a conversation we've had on the program, even after the show is over, by all means, you can write us a letter. You can send us an email here at sot@wunc.org, or we will gladly accept mail the old-fashioned way. Yes, we have an address, The State of Things, WUNC Radio 120, Friday Center Drive, Chapel Hill, North Carolina, 27517. 25 years ago, 5 civil rights activists were shot and killed in the middle of the day. The incident would later come to be known as the Greensboro Massacre. Members of the Ku Klux Klan were later acquitted of the killings in 2 different criminal trials, while the Greensboro police were found liable in a 3rd civil trial. Earlier this month, activists again gathered in Greensboro to finish the march that began in 1979 and to remember those who were killed. Producer Jordana Gustafson was there.
Freedom fighters sat in Woolworth to kick off the fight against Negro segregation. 18 years later, in the same city, the so-called democracy that those 4 sat in the restaurant for was smothered in blood with the execution of 5 young freedom fighters. Let's never forget that.
How do you feel?
My name is Ray Hamilton. I came up with my church, St. Paul Baptist Church, out of Charlotte, North Carolina. 79, we came up just a few of the guys, you know. We had heard about they were having a rally, you know, and we had been seeing it on the news and everything, and so we just decided to come up, you know, to participate in it. But before we could get here, the commotion started, and they started turning everybody back. It was real, real frustrating, very frustrating. It was kind of disgusting. But, you know, it's just something that we had to always deal with, you know, because we ran into barriers like that all the time. So, you know, over a period of time, you get used to that.
We got to fight back!
I'm Al McShirley. I'm a lawyer from Chapel Hill. I was in D.C. at the time, and after the murders, people, organized people from all over the world to come to Greensboro. I think we had 8 buses from Washington came, thousands of people. I think 25 to 30,000 people came to try to suck some of the fear and hatred out of the community. There was all this red baiting that had gone on and all this tremendous reaction trying to isolate the people who were killed and their supporters. It was terrible. It's a blot on North Carolina history.
My name is Fred Ballard. I was here in 79. I wasn't with the group where the shooting took place, you know, the other group. But we're making sure that this didn't happen in vain.
Do things feel better today, too, in North Carolina in terms of race relations?
Good question. No. No. What it is, a lot of our race relationship is not as overt as it used to be. The barriers has been taken down, but the heart of people hasn't changed. This is something that's been going on ever since the creation of the world. And whether it wasn't black and white, might have been Jews, Gentiles, or whatever, but we've always had this. So hopefully that's what the new creation might be about. We who
believe in. Producer Jordana Gustafson at a rally earlier this month, remembering those who died during the Greensboro Massacre 25 years ago.